The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com: Scholastic Book Fair organizers are cautiously optimistic after segregated diverse book collection is discontinued. And this article was written by Fortessa Latifi. Amy Ignatow has been organizing the Scholastic Book Fair at her children's school for 7 years. She loves the fair, whether it's the smell of new books or the reactions of children finding ways into worlds they didn't know existed. But this year, that almost came to an end for Ignatow after Scholastic's announcement that it would separate books with themes of race, gender, and LGBTQ+ identity, a move that fair organizers and librarians across the country saw as the Scholastic organization's obsequiousness to right-wing groups aiming to limit the books children can read. Now that Scholastic has reversed that decision, Ignatow says she's incredibly relieved. "I recognize that it's easy to say now, but I would not have been comfortable working with them again, both in my capacity as a kid lit author and as a fair organizer," she says. And that was heartbreaking. In an announcement on October 13th, Scholastic said it would change how some schools would present the Scholastic Book Fair amid increasing restrictions and book bans. Instead of being available as usual, certain books about race, gender, and LGBTQ+ identities, which some schools have banned, would have been offered only at schools that opted in to what Scholastic called their Share Every Story, Celebrate Every Voice collection. This, Scholastic said, was an answer to an almost impossible dilemma that teachers and administrators at school with book bans face. "Back away from these titles or risk making teachers, librarians, and volunteers vulnerable to being fired, sued, or prosecuted." But on October 25th, after much backlash, Scholastic reversed its decision and discontinued the Share Every Story collection. "Even if the decision was made with good intention, we understand now that it was a mistake to segregate diverse books in an elective case." A letter announcing the reversal from Scholastic Trade Publishing President Ellie Berger stated, according to Publishers Weekly, "The letter was not posted publicly, but it was sent to authors who signed a statement against the initial decision, who have since posted it to social media." Scholastic posted a public statement announcing the change, saying the separate collection will be discontinued as Scholastic works to find a better way. "As we consider how to make our book fairs available to all kids, we will keep in mind the needs of our educators facing local content restrictions and the children we serve," the statement said. Scholastic also decried the book bans that prompted its initial decision. "It's unsettling that the current divisive landscape in the U.S. is creating an environment that could deny any child access to books, or that teachers could be penalized for creating access to all stories for their students," the statement continued. According to data from the American Library Association, ALA, requests to ban books hit a 21-year high, with 1,050 censor requests in 2022, a steep increase from the 619 requests in 2021. "We are seeing less and less of what used to happen, which was an individual parent would see their student reading a book and look at it and have questions about it and take it to a teacher or librarian to have a discussion," Deborah Caldwell Stone, the director of the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom, told CNN. "What we are seeing now is organized political advocacy groups go to school boards with an agenda, with a long list of books they want banned, because those books don't fit their political, moral, or religious agenda." Book bans are rising sharply in schools and public libraries, leaving librarians struggling to do their jobs and students trying to find the books they're looking for. According to the New York Times, most of the challenged books were by or about people of color or LGBTQ people. Education Week reported that some book bans are tied to state laws prohibiting explicit sexual or sensitive material in lesson plans. The books that were included in Scholastic's separate category ranged from those written by Black poet Amanda Gorman to queer singer JoJo Siwa, and even books about the late Representative John Lewis and the civil rights icon Ruby Bridges. Librarians and organizers Teen Vogue has spoken with say that separating these books was one step further on the slippery slope of accommodation to censorship demands and right-wing influence. Molly Quinn, the 28-year-old librarian behind At the Memeing Librarian, tells Teen Vogue that the initial Scholastic decision gave a sense of gravitas to the censorship attempts. It gives an appearance of validity to their side, that these books should be able to be opted out of, Quinn explains. The reality is, you can't opt out of the human experience. You can't opt out of diversity. Hearing that Scholastic has reversed course is a relief, Quinn says, but there's more work to be done. I am hesitantly optimistic by this statement. We as a community need to make sure they follow through and actually integrate the diverse books into every fair. Garrett Taylor, a research and instruction librarian, says many questions still remain, despite Scholastic's new announcement. Scholastic said it is discontinuing its Share Every Story collection as it works to find a different solution, but Taylor says it's not clear what that means. Are they reintegrating the selections that would have made up this collection into the rest of their collection offerings as they were before? He asks. Or are these titles being dropped entirely? They don't seem to clarify that point when I look closely at their statement. Ann Sparkman, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications at Scholastic Inc., tells Teen Vogue via email that this is being actively worked on, adding that it's too early to provide specifics. What is certain today is the titles remain available through the online fair for all families participating in fairs through their child's school. Hosts can still order titles individually, and if you planned on having the collection in your fair, you will receive it, says Sparkman. Okay, they're working to find a better way. That's nice, says Trailer. So, my final thought, prove it, Scholastic. Our next article from TeenVogue.com. Is Biden risking 2024 over no Israel ceasefire? Some youth groups say yes. And this article was written by Lexi McMenamin. Yesterday, when asked about the chances of a ceasefire in Gaza during a press conference, President Joe Biden replied, "None, no possibility." The statement effectively rejected the calls for a ceasefire in Gaza that have come from college campuses, high schools, and voices at countless marches and protests. Now the question becomes, how many voters Biden and the Democrats are willing to sacrifice for his stance on the war? Recent reporting points to a widening gap between voters and elected officials on this issue, jeopardizing a Democratic win in the 2024 presidential. In a report published this morning, one Democratic aide told HuffPost, "I've never seen such a disconnect between where voters and constituents are and where Congress is. And that's saying something because there's always a disconnect." The Democratic Party is also in disarray over the issue, including the targeting of Michigan Representative Rashida Tlaib, Democrat. After the October 7th Hamas attacks, in which 1,400 people were killed and more than 240 were abducted into Gaza, the Israeli military has killed over 11,000 people in Gaza, according to the Gaza Health Ministry. Since then, 70% of Gaza's population has been displaced, per a UNRWA spokesperson. The head of the United Nations said the attacks have turned Gaza, where, CNN has calculated, a child is killed every 10 minutes, into a graveyard for children, Over 4,100 have died since October 7th, according to the health ministry. Israel has repeatedly rejected ceasefire calls without the return of hostages. Hamas has claimed at least 50 of the hostages by Israel's shelling, though, as of this writing, the claim has not been separately verified. On November 9th, it was announced that Israel had agreed to a daily 4-hour humanitarian pause to enable civilians to flee. As reported by CNN, the total number of aid trucks permitted into Gaza since October 7th is just over the average amount of aid trucks that were entering Gaza daily before the attacks. As the death toll grows in the second month of war, the Biden White House may soon have to grapple with how its choice to back Israel could impact the president's 2024 chances. Last week, in Gallup polling, support for Biden matched his presidency's record lows. A New York Times Siena College poll released on November 5th found that both Biden and Trump are deeply unpopular with voters, pushing some to consider anti-vaxxer Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It is estimated that millions worldwide have taken to the streets and the halls of elected officials in recent weeks, from college students to high school and middle schoolers to grandparents and rabbis, to condemn the continued military support for Israel as it refuses to consider a ceasefire. On top of the protests, reporting suggests that Biden's approach is out of step with even some in his own State Department, in addition to over 500 former Biden campaign staffers and a smattering of elected officials, and the intensity of the pro-ceasefire push is ratcheting up. On November 7th, four national youth organizations, March for Our Lives, Sunrise Movement, United We Dream, and Gen Z for Change, published a letter to the Biden administration that warned, "The position of your administration is badly out of step with young people and the positions of Democratic voters, whom have been shown to support a ceasefire by supermajorities in multiple polls. This is also becoming an issue we are hearing about from thousands of young people across the country. We cannot explain your position to the people of our generation." Teen Vogue has consistently covered why Gen Z is unenthused about a Biden presidency part 2 or a Biden-Trump redo in 2024. Earlier this year, contributor Rachel Gianfaza observed this reluctance regarding Biden versus Trump in Teen Vogue. And as NBC News noted in its coverage on the November 7th letter from youth organizations, many youth voters have already threatened to remove their votes in 2024 over what they see as Biden's inconsistency. In the spring, for example, climate advocates were crushed by Biden's decision to approve an oil project despite activist pushback. We may be seeing the same disconnect due to the ceasefire. Last week, a Quinnipiac University poll found that only 21% of respondents under age 35 approved of Biden's Israel policy. It's not just the youth vote. Biden is risking the slim majority he won in Michigan in 2020 by alienating the state's Muslim voters, whose support for him in 2024 is reportedly cratering after a warning to Biden that he'd lose their vote without a ceasefire. Many Jewish organizations are supporting Israel as well as U.S. funding to the country, but there are also anti-Zionist Jewish groups and other people, including writers, artists, and academics, who have been scrutinizing the U.S.-Israel relationship and are pushing Biden toward a ceasefire. While protesters prioritize the ceasefire call, the Ceasefire Now resolution from a progressive group of legislators languishes. The total group now includes 17 representatives. As pointed out by some on X, formerly Twitter, no white congressperson has backed the ceasefire resolution. The Democratic Party's lack of agreement on the treatment of Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib, Democrat, Michigan, Congress's first and only Palestinian-American, from a Republican-mounted censure in the House that was ultimately supported by 22 Democrats, is worsening relations. The resolution, which passed by 234 to 188, accused Tlaib of promoting false narratives regarding the October 7, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel and for calling for the destruction of the State of Israel. PBS NewsHour called the bipartisan vote an extraordinary rebuke of her rhetoric about the Israel-Hamas war. In an emotional speech from the floor, Tlaib said, "There are millions of people across our country who oppose Netanyahu's extremism and are done watching our government support collective punishment. Like me, Mr. Chair, they don't believe the answer to war crimes is more war crimes." Alexandra Rojas, the executive director of Justice Democrats, accused Congress of exerting anti-Palestinian bigotry on Tlaib through the censure. The Sunrise Movement tweeted in response to the resolution, "While the death toll in Gaza surpasses 10,000 as innocent children and people die every day, Congress prioritized their time to silence the only Palestinian voice in office." This isn't the first time that Tlaib has been targeted in Congress for her advocacy on behalf of Palestine. In May, then-Speaker Kevin McCarthy blocked an event Tlaib had planned in remembrance of the Nakba, which was ultimately hosted by Senator Bernie Sanders. The potential $14 billion in military funding to Israel passed by House Republicans will not be approved by the Senate, but Congress is fast approaching a shutdown again. In the United Nations, the U.S. remains in the minority over not supporting a ceasefire. Over 38 journalists have been killed during the war, 35 of them Palestinians in Gaza, according to an updated count from the Committee to Protect Journalists. And the UN announced on November 8th that 92 of the organization's employees have been killed since October 7th, the highest number of United Nations aid workers killed in a conflict in the history of the United Nations. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. SAG-AFTRA and AMPTP. After 118 days on strike, a deal has been made. And this article was written by Alyssa Hardy. After 118 days on strike, the Screen Actors Guild American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, SAG-AFTRA, and the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, AMPTP, have finally reached a deal. The strike, which started on July 14th, came after the two groups could not come to an agreement on issues like streaming residuals and the use of AI. The strike officially ended at 12:01 a.m. on Thursday, November 9th. In an email to members, the union wrote, "We have arrived at a contract that will enable SAG-AFTRA members from every category to build sustainable careers. Many thousands of performers now and into the future will benefit from this work." At the beginning of the strike, SAG-AFTRA National Executive Director Duncan Crabtree Ireland said that union actors made a median salary of $46,960 in 2021. Throughout the strike, hundreds of actors, writers, and crew members joined picket lines. Many celebrities were vocal in their support of the union, holding strong until the deal was the best it could be. Some, including Aubrey Plaza, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, John Hamm, and Mark Ruffalo, even signed a letter asking the union leaders to hold strong. When the deal was finally reached, Fran Drescher, union president, posted about the historic moment. "We did it! The billion-plus dollars deal. Three times the last contract. New ground was broke everywhere," wrote Drescher on Instagram. The actors' strike was part of a larger labor movement throughout Hollywood that hit a fever pitch over the summer. In May, the Writers Guild of America also went on strike, which ended with a contract ratified in early October. The impacts of the strike were felt throughout the industry, including with many other unions who stood in solidarity with writers and actors over the course of the months. While SAG-AFTRA members and the union board still need to ratify the deal, there's no doubt work will start back up as soon as possible. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Jay-Z and Beyoncé's daughter, Blue Ivy, almost had a different name. And this article was written by Kara Nesvig. Jay-Z and Beyoncé's daughter, Blue Ivy Carter, isn't even 12 years old yet and is already a cultural icon. Who else can say they were crowned the most famous baby in the world only a few days after their birth? But could you imagine a world in which she wasn't Blue Ivy? A world in which her fans weren't cleverly named the Blue Ivy League? Seems impossible. But Dad Jay-Z says Blue Ivy wasn't actually his and Bae's first choice for their eldest child's name. Since she was born in 2012, there have been rumors that the name Blue Ivy could have been inspired by Jay's favorite color, or a reference to a passage by writer and activist Rebecca Solnit, or an homage to the couple's favorite number. Blue has four letters, and Ivy could refer to four's Roman numeral IV. But Jay-Z says the truth is much more simple. She was meant to be Brooklyn, Jay told Gayle King in a new interview with CBS Mornings. It was supposed to be Brooklyn. That was the name we had in theory. But when we got the sonograms, you know, the baby is super small, and we was calling her a blueberry, Jay recalled. Like, look at the little blueberry. It was like a nickname. For 9 months, we were like, look at the little blueberry. So it was just natural. We just took the berry off and called her Blue. And thus, Blue Ivy was born. And this is only the beginning for the star in the making. If you were lucky enough to catch Beyoncé on her Renaissance tour this year, you probably saw Blue triumphantly performing alongside her mom during the song My Power. According to Jay, Blue worked extremely hard to make her dream of dancing on stage a reality. Jay-Z called Blue's journey towards the spotlight a process of reclaiming her power after being bullied online by racist media and trolls as a young child. What makes me super proud, and I still get goosebumps seeing her walk on stage. Blue's been born into a life she didn't ask for, he explained. Since she was born, she's been under scrutiny and the public eye, and everyone having an opinion, even as a little girl, for example, with how she keeps her hair. So for her to be on that stage and reclaim her power, and the song is called My Power, you can't write a better script. According to Jay, Blue wanted to dance with her mom on the very first night of the Renaissance World Tour. She was nervous, but she was also ready. However, her parents wanted her to be sure, so they asked her to practice before performing in front of thousands and thousands of attendees. She's 11. She's nervous. I know how nervous she was. I know how frightened she was. But she wanted to do it, he shared. She wanted to do it the first night. We were like, okay, if this is something you want to do, you can't just go out there. You gotta work with the dancers. Blue worked beyond hard to nail the moves, something that probably won't surprise anyone who knows the work ethic of her mom. She worked every day. She had a little icy pack on her back some days, Jay said. Sounds like we'll be seeing Blue Ivy, grace even more stages in the near future, with or without Beyoncé by her side. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Travis Kelce had the best reaction to Taylor Swift changing lyrics to Karma. And this article was written by Ashley Carter. It's Taylor Swift's and Travis Kelce's world, and we're just living in it. The superstar musician and her football-playing boyfriend reached new levels of adorable on Saturday night during Swift's Eras tour stop in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Kelsey traveled down to see Swift perform live for the first time since they started dating. While there were many viral moments during Swift's first set of shows to kick off the international leg of her mega successful tour, one certain lyric change had Swifties spiraling. During her performance of Karma, Swift changed the lyrics to, "Karma is the guy on the Chiefs coming straight home to me," a clear nod to Kelsey, who plays for the Kansas City Chiefs. Swift couldn't help but giggle after making the change, and the audience, along with her dancers, cheered and laughed in surprise. But Kelsey's reaction to the lyric change was one of the best. While standing in the VIP tent alongside Swift's dad, Scott Swift, Kelsey can be seen in fan footage lighting up at Swift's mention of him. Scott Swift turned to Kelsey and playfully tapped him on the shoulder before the NFL player smiled and covered his face. But the cuteness didn't end there. Following her performance, Swift was shown in multiple videos walking off stage and waving to fans before she broke into a run straight into Kelsey's arms, who was waiting for her off to the side. Swift planted a kiss on him before they walked into the tent. Fans couldn't get enough of the entire interaction, as proven by the comments under the video. "How many times have you watched this? Me, yes," one person wrote. Him standing there waiting for her, her little run over to him, the hug, the kiss, just wow, another wrote. The footage from the show is endless, including video showing Kelsey jamming to Blank Space and of Scott Swift recording him at one point. Taylor Swift and Travis Kelsey's whirlwind romance was first rumored to begin in September, when a source said the two were hanging out. This came a few months after Kelsey said on his podcast that he attended the Eras Tour in Kansas City and made a friendship bracelet with his number on it to give to Swift. At the time, he said he was never able to get it to her, but somehow the two ended up connecting. It wasn't until Swift attended a Chiefs game on September 24th that fans started to take the new fling seriously. Since then, the couple has been spotted together, holding hands, multiple times. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.